Happy Sunday, everybody. No advertisers in this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. Zero. Nada. But there are people that make it possible, and that's you. When you support us at charliekirk.com/support, like Veronica from Laredo, Texas, or like Kathy from Palm Desert, California, or Amanda from Washington, or Joanne from Rolling Meadows, Illinois, you help us hire more staff. You help us stay bulletproof against the cancellation crew. You help us stay strong against the censors. Alan from Parker, Colorado. Marine from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Or how about Pabel from Avondale, Arizona? You let us hire staff. Research every day. It's Sunday, and guess what? We're still posting episodes on Saturday and Sunday. Two on Monday, two on Tuesday, two on Wednesday. You guys know how it works. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And please consider supporting us. CharlieKirk.com/support. Students are not receiving the truth. They are being lied to. And you help us grow, flourish at CharlieKirk.com/support. And this episode is a speech I gave in Houston, Texas to the wonderful Harris County Republican Party. And I make the argument, Texas could save the country. It's that simple. Texas could put the blueprint forward on how to save the country, and also take some questions from the audience. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, you could do so at tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win. That's right, to win the American culture war. Our big event has been announced in December, tpusa.com/amfest. That's tpusa.com/amfest. Check it out right now. As always, email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And thank you for supporting our program and making all this possible. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Good evening. Great to be here. And thank you to the Harris County Republicans. It's nice to be in the great state of Texas, which is actually a state that I'm talking about nonstop this week. So this is a perfect speech. This is actually going to be one of the more important speeches I've given this year. No problem. And we're going to kind of go through that. So just a little bit of background. I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. Good place to be from, not a good place to be. The fun thing about Chicago, Illinois is we have term limits in Illinois. It's one term in office, one term in jail. And so we asked for our governor's cell number. We actually mean his cell number, not my. I got one more. I promise. My grandmother was a lifelong Republican, passed away in the mid 1990s, and she's been voting Democrat ever since. And so, all right, I'm done with the Chicago jokes. I promise. So it's so bad, but it's so good. I know you're a Chicagoan, so you know it's so true. That's why it's funny. I now live in Arizona. And run Turning Point USA, the nation's largest conservative student youth organization. There's a lot of great young people here in College Republicans, Young Republicans, and Turning Point students. Give it up for them. They're phenomenal. And our mission is to get our children to love America again. And we are waging the most aggressive and, I would argue, effective offensive strategy on high school and college campuses to inspire a love and gratitude for the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world, which is so desperately needed on college campuses. We have over 200 full-time people on staff, and we continue to push forward. I personally am going on a campus tour starting in about a week and a half. Go to University of Michigan, then I go to University of Minnesota, then I go to Baylor University on October 13th. And it's more liberal than you might imagine, though, just so you know. Baylor has slipped. Not as liberal as UT, though. I got to tell you, UT is on its own island. I have a UT story for you. When I visited UT Austin, that was the most unsafe I've ever felt on a college campus. They are nasty over there, those college activists at UT Austin. They think they own the place. They don't. And so then Boise State, University of Vermont, pray for me that day. The University of Oregon, really pray for me that day. And then Alabama and Clemson, which should be a lot of fun, which should be a little bit somewhat nicer, I guess you should say. Vermont and Oregon are going to be those will be spectacles. So you guys can follow along on digital and social media. So there's a lot I want to talk about. We're going to do questions, but there's actually the main thing that's on my mind, and it's so applicable to all of you right now. In fact, it's right now, in the next 48 hours, 72 hours, the next couple days, Texas could lay out the blueprint of how to save the country. And so I am not going to do what some people are doing in the national media, which is to criticize your statewide elected officials. I'm not going to do that. I do have my own personal opinions about it, and you'll kind of see them laced through. But I don't live here, and so I don't go to people's home and tell you how to govern yourself. So that's up for you to kind of determine whether or not your governor's doing a good job or not, or your attorney, whatever. I can give you recommendations or suggestions. What I am going to say, though, is that whether the leadership of this state chose this or not, Texas is now in the middle of the greatest constitutional question of the modern era. And outside of the constitutional question, because the Constitution is a moral document, it is a moral question. And the moral question that Texas has in front of them is, do you do the right thing when the federal government refuses to do what they're supposed to do? That's the question. Is that Christian Collins over there? Did I see? Yeah, hey, Christian. Great event you hosted, by the way, about a month ago. Great to see you. So that's the question in front of you, in front of Texas right now, where we know that 1.8 million people have illegally crossed from the southern border so far this year. But I think all of us were kind of activated into a place that we haven't been in quite some time, where we saw 12,000 Haitians in Del Rio, Texas, cross illegally into our country. For 5 hours, DHS and Border Patrol sat there and did nothing. Now, I want to be very clear. DHS and Border Patrol are American heroes. They are under orders to do nothing. It's not on them. But the people that did do something, the Border Patrol that decided to get on a horse, get criticized by the national media of whipping these criminal Haitians, even though it's a rein or a bridle of a horse. They never rode a horse in their life, so they don't know what they're talking about. And they say, Maxine Waters comes out and says, this is worse than what we saw in slavery. Okay, that's what Maxine Waters says. And so the regime, the Biden regime, comes out and says, this is all under control. It's going according to plan. Well, their plan, they're actually telling the truth, because their plan is open borders, as many third world people as possible to come into the country that will remain obedient Democrat Party voters and people on welfare, even though that kind of calculus has been put in jeopardy thanks to all of you, as Hispanics and Latinos are actually trending more to the right than they ever would have imagined. But they're going with this strategy anyway, that they want more Guatemalans and Nicaraguans and Mexicans and El Salvadorians. And let's just throw in 12,000 Haitians, by the way, with 400 pregnant women who, if they give birth here, that child gets a U.S. citizenship birth certificate immediately. And so we have this crisis in front of us that I don't think many people here, like the leadership of Texas, I don't know if they signed up for this. But whether they like it or not, this is the question, and the left has already told us how they answer this question. Let's go back in time. Do Democrats defy federal statute when they don't like it? Yes. Marijuana laws. It is illegal to bank, according to federal law, with THC-filled marijuana. Colorado, Oregon, California, Nevada do it anyway. It is illegal, according to federal law, to tell your police officers and your sheriffs and your DA not to comply with immigration, customs, and enforcement to create a sanctuary city. Despite that, Illinois, California, Washington, Oregon, New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Vermont created sanctuary states in defiance to federal law. It is illegal to give illegals voting privileges. Yet in Vermont and California, illegals are voting in state and local elections. The Democrats have already figured out a long time ago that what we view as the rule of law is dead in this country. I wish it wasn't. I miss that country. I miss the free society I grew up in. I miss the country where we didn't talk about skin color all the time. I miss the country where everyone stood for the flag. I miss the country where I could watch an NFL football game and not have to be propagandized with these ridiculous two-word virtue signaling statements. End racism. I'm a good person. Look at me. Like, enough. You're a multi-million-dollar black athlete. Like, I don't need to hear about how oppressed you are. Okay? Get your life in order. Instead, we now know not just the rule of law, but the American fabric over the last 10 years is a completely different country. So this is the question, isn't it? What do we do about it? All of us are saying this all day long. And I know a lot of you are saying, Charlie, I'm tired of just watching Tucker Carlson, love him, and buying a pillow. I need to do more. By the way, promo code Kirk, okay? MyPillow.com. And here's the amazing thing. Texas can be the blueprint right now. Right now. Texas can do what the Democrats did to us over the last decade, which is they defied federal law. Texas needs to start enforcing federal law. That's the blueprint. And now this is unprecedented for a lot of Republicans because CNN will say something negative about you. It's true. The New York Times will write a story that calls you a bad person. The Washington Post, they will come after you. That will happen. Now, that scares a lot of Republicans. It does. I know we laugh about it. We chuckle. That's enough to get a lot of Republicans to try to sue for peace, to go to the middle. So the moral question in front of us, what would you tell your children? Something bad and something evil and something immoral is happening in front of you. Do you say, though, I got to trust the process on this, there's a very protocol, or do you stop the robber that is trying to hold the store at gunpoint? Do you stop the mugger that is abusing the woman on the side of the street? The moral question for Texas is, do you put the nation on your back and do what everyone wants you to do? Now, I do want to give Texas credit. I think you're inching towards this direction. I think that Texas is starting to use DPS and other assets. It's not nearly enough. Estimates are that anywhere between 800 to 1,000 Haitians have already been released into the interior. They took over a bus. They'll be American citizens before you know it, or have children, and it's done. So Republicans will say this. They'll say, we as Republicans follow the process and the procedure, and we don't have the authority to do it. Now, again, we've already gone through the list of how Democrats have invalidated the social contract. Now, all of us, whether or not we know it, we live under a social contract. That contract has been null and void, and our party hasn't realized it. That contract was voided a long time ago. You know what that contract was? If a judge says something, we're going to listen to what that judge says. They don't care about that. They signed CDC eviction moratoriums despite what the Supreme Court of the United States says. The social contract says that you are going to respect separation of powers, checks and balances, an independent judiciary, and the consent of the governed. The Democrats haven't cared about that for a long time. So then what do you do? Well, we are in the midst of something that makes a lot of Republicans uncomfortable, which is why we need a Churchill or a Lincoln right now, because they were not uncomfortable with this. We are in a power struggle of who's going to control the country. It's that simple. It's either they're going to be in control or we're going to be in control. I wish I lived in the free society I grew up in. I yearn for those days. Now it's a question of, are you going to stop 2 million people from waltzing into your nation? Or are you going to write a bunch of press releases and go on cable television and complain about it? I watched on cable television while three governors, not yours, from other red states, smirked. And as Harris Faulkner, who does a wonderful job on Fox News, by the way, asked them, have you heard back from Biden? And they said, no, we haven't heard back. No, we haven't heard back. As if this is some sort of massive owning of Joe Biden. As if we as Republicans should be shocked that this regime is not calling you back because they don't want... We know how they stand. Stop acting like this is the 1990s. The floodgates are open. The reason they're doing this is because they think we are gutless. They think we're unwilling to mobilize the Texas Rangers. They think we're unwilling to go mobilize the National Guard. Now, some people say, well, Biden can nationalize the National Guard. Make him. He won't do it. He won't. That is a false threat. And guess what? We're not in a place of a rule of law anymore. I wish we were. Make him enforce it. Say, oh, wait, I'm sorry. Wait, you're in control of the Texas National Guard? Let's have a vote between the National Guard. Do you pledge to the state of Texas or to the Biden regime flag? They'd say, I'm going to go enforce the border. Have a nice day, Joe Biden. Now, some people say, Charlie, we are slumbering towards, or not slumbering, we are bouldering towards a civil war if you do this. I think it's the exact opposite. I think if we don't do this, we're going towards a civil war. I think if we don't show the other side we mean business and there's an equal and opposite reaction for keeping the borders open and telling DHS and Border Patrol not to do anything when 12,000 criminal Haitians come into the country, then all of a sudden you are going to get to a point where everything gets combustible. You are going to get to a place where you got becomes a pressure cooker. So the question is, what's stopping us? A lot. Ryan knows it's true, but that we can get to that later. Because I'm as you could tell, I'm not here to bash individual things. This is a broader philosophical question, right? And you guys can do with it what you will. What's stopping us is a couple things. Number one, muscle memory. Muscle memory is a very powerful thing. It's a Pavlovian response. And you guys know Pavlov's dogs. Every time, you could do this with a dog. It works every time. 50 times, you feed the dog and you ring a bell. After the 50th time you ring the bell, the dog starts salivating. So the muscle memory Pavlovian response that is built in to Republicans is, oh, Democrat president does something bad. Let's go issue a press release. Let's go write about how terrible this is. We have been conditioned to act as if the other side is not trying a forceful takeover of the nation. So what do we do? Well, the second reason, I'll actually go to the second reason, is that there is this question that no one wants to be blamed for escalation. That no one wants to be blamed as the person that took us past the point of no return. This is a ridiculous contention. Could you imagine Winston Churchill on June 4th, 1940, when he gave one of the most beautiful speeches ever given in the English language in front of Parliament, where he said, we will fight them on the beaches, we will fight them in the streets, and we will fight them in the hills. We will never surrender. Could you imagine people saying, yeah, I mean, he's escalating the conflict. Now, I don't know. Abraham Lincoln, who gave the famous Cooper Union Address, who said that if slavery is not wrong, nothing is wrong. And we as a nation, if we do not have our moral guardrails and our North Star united around freedom and equality, then we don't actually have a nation. Could you imagine people accusing Abraham Lincoln of escalating the conflict? Some people still do, actually, believe it or not. And so we're at this moment where Texas could inspire every Republican across the country, every state across the country, to change the whole way we view. This would be the paradigm shift in Overton window that all of you have been asking for and been praying for. Because what it would do would be a humiliating death blow to this regime. Here's all it has to take. So the governor of this state needs to mobilize every Texas Ranger that possibly has idle time or is willing to do what they want to do. Send them down to the southern border, give them a pair of handcuffs, go charter 20 planes, load them up on the planes, and take videos of them flying nonstop to Port-au-Prince. Now, mind you, the other side, when they do dramatic things, they burn down Walgreens, Wendy's, and smash windows. When we do dramatic things, we enforce the law. What a great image to show the rest of the country. And sure, you'll have CNN getting pictures of women screaming, getting on the plane. So what? They're going to do that anyway. They're doing that when you have a guy on horseback with a bridle or a rein that they can't identify, saying that he's whipping some sort of Haitian. They're going to DEFCON 10 when we're doing Border Patrol on horseback. Maxine Waters, this is worse than slavery. Stop operating as if it matters what the other side says. Forget it. It does not matter. The images of one plane after the other taking off from Del Rio, Texas, would send shockwaves, and a seed of doubt would grow into an ocean of activism against this regime. What would happen next is North Dakota would send the workers back to work to go build the Keystone XL pipeline. Who cares what Biden says? And one after the other, all of a sudden, we would fulfill the mandate that we all have, which is the states created the federal government. The federal government did not create the states. That the balance of power comes to this state, Texas. And this is why I'm saying all of you right now have the opportunity of a lifetime. You could save the country. I look at this stuff for a living, 12 hours a day. I think about it. I pray about it. I look at it. This is the most vulnerable this regime has been and I think will be for the next 5 to 10 years. They are on the ropes. And the one thing that they fear is the fact that it shows the state can actually govern the country, then they can. It will undermine every program that they are doing. Everything that they are doing will all of a sudden shatter in front of them. They will not get the budget bill passed. They will not get their infrastructure bill passed. Out of nowhere, people will look and they'll say, oh, you can do that? You better believe we can do that. And we as Republicans, when we decide to do things that have not been done, we don't go do $1 billion of damage in downtown Minneapolis. We don't create our own sovereign country, Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. And by the way, they're the secessionists. They're creating new countries in downtown Seattle, for goodness sake. You know what we do? We make sure that everything reflects the unchanged written law. Because that's the only thing that keeps us together. What I'm saying is the way that we save the rule of law is admit that it's dead and we bring it back to life using the Texas Rangers. Because you put them back on the southern border, you do that. And so you don't have a lot of time. The governor has to act immediately. And the governor of Texas, again, you guys have your own opinions about it. I think he's a nice person. I really do. I've met him once, whatever. Here's the point. I'm not here to talk about it. It's interchangeable. It could be anybody. This is a question of leadership, right? This is a question of what do courageous and great people do when things get tough? And the governor's already missed a huge opportunity. The governor should have gone on cable television like Andrew Cuomo and acted as if he was governor of America. Remember when Andrew Cuomo took over the airwaves back under the virus and he undermined Trump? Why is the governor of Texas not doing that? Instead, the governor of Texas is going on television and saying, well, you know, we're not getting enough support. We're not getting enough resources. You're going to get nothing. You're getting nothing. So what do? You have been abandoned by design. This is manufactured mayhem. We know that, obviously. All of a sudden, you would then have a reference point where the governor of Texas or whomever would then become the true leader when things get tough. People say, well, Charlie, how do we remove Biden? How do we weaken him? How do we do this? Show 300 million people how the Constitution really works. You go on cable television and you make the argument. We as Republicans usually don't like doing this sort of stuff. We like to trust the process. We go through the courts. We go through judges. We love the Constitution. But as Abraham Lincoln said, I would rather solve things through ballots than bullets. And where our country is going right now is in a direction I do not like. I have no choice but to do what is necessary to protect the people that I have taken an oath to protect. They're going down to the border, we're arresting them, and they're leaving the country. The federal government will not get in our way, because if you've ever met a Texas Ranger, you don't want to get in their way at any time whatsoever. And guess what? DHS and Border Patrol would be applauding as this happened, because those people are heroes. And what would happen is all of a sudden, you would undermine the entire organization. Mayorkas would send a press release to DHS rank and file or Border Patrol. They laugh at it. Like, you know what? We're actually going back on our horses. You want to take back the country? It starts right here on the southern border. It starts right here with this one piece of action. And this goes back to the final question. Then we'll do some questions of people say, Charlie, what's stopping us? What is it? And it's really one thing. It is the will to act. Otherwise known as the crisis, the thing that is missing the most in the country. Guess what? We have truth. We do. Praise God. We have energy. Look at the turnout. It's terrific. We have an alert and aware citizenry. I'm really thrilled about that. Grassroots activists are more informed than any other time I have seen them in the last 10 years. I have grassroots activists knowing what critical race theory is. They know what Herbert Marcuse is and Michel Foucault and Jacques Derrida. I have grassroots activists saying that they're getting back into reading the Federalist Papers and Madison and Jefferson and Hamilton. It gives me hope. The one thing that is missing is the thing that actually matters the most. As George S. Patton said, may he rest in peace, one of the great Americans ever to live, that moral courage is the most absent yet necessary characteristic in men. Aristotle famously said that courage is the ultimate virtue because without courage, there are no other virtues. George S. Patton also had another great expression. Lead, follow, or get out of the way. And so the question is one of the will. It's courage. It's will that Churchillian or Lincoln figure step up when we know what needs to get done. But guess what? This is not a spectator sport. This is a pretty important room right here where all of you can do something about it. I just told you what you probably already agree with. And I've done a lot of thinking of trying to how to structure this argument, how it could be done. Try to make it happen. Demand it. Russell Kirk famously said, politicians are reading off the script provided to them by activists and voters. What script are we giving to them? Selfie lines of how great of a job they're doing? Maybe they're doing a great job. Like letters of thanks so much for this commission or that commission? Or are we saying, this has got to be solved? Because this is not about Texas. Because voters in Bangor, Maine, and citizens in Billings, Montana, and in Leeds, North Dakota, are hoping for and praying that this state, this beautiful state with some of the greatest people in the country, with an independent streak of freedom that I see no other states across the country, they're saying, I pray at this moment, they will humiliate and start the counteroffensive against this regime. The eyes of the nation are on Texas to do this. So where do you all come and contact the people that can make this happen? This could be solved in 48 hours. It would go down in the history books of that moment when the conservatives realized it's a totally new set of rules. And then from that point forward, you would see this incredible just movement of action and activism coming from there. It's in our hands, I guess. And so if this doesn't happen, things are just going to continue as is. It's that simple. If this does happen, you will start to see a historic and I believe unprecedented challenging of a regime that has seemed untouchable until now. So God bless Texas. Ball's in your court. Let's do some questions.
One, you had a good answer for a good idea for the energy pipeline and what maybe some of the governors should do about that. Number two, us leaving here today, what I'm hearing is maybe we should all call Abbott and say, send the entire guard down there.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty. I don't think we have to overcomplicate it. Send the guard, send Texas Rangers, fly them to Port-au-Prince, and then also deputize a citizen force to do this at every single sector across the southern border. That it's, again, I don't think you need, and the problem is a bunch of lawyers are probably preventing him from doing this, right? Lawyers that think we're living in the 1990s. You think lawyers are preventing Seattle from saying, you know what, we're not going to comply with federal immigration law. They've already made the decision. We're living in the post-constitutional order. They've then used that to take over the government and take over the country to allow the borders remain wide open. We need to look at ourselves as the restorers of the rule of law. So then the other question is about energy. Yeah, the pipeline. And I've said this for a couple months, and I'm going to keep on saying it. There's no reason whatsoever why every governor, North Dakota, Kristi Noem, Kansas, Nebraska, they should just send the hard hat workers back to work. Make the federal government go arrest a bunch of middle class welders and people that are working with their hands. Now people say, well, Charlie, that's defiance. Of course it is. what kind of country do you think you're living in right now? And guess what? Look at this juxtaposition. This is all you have to say on television. Well, Charlie, this is against the president's orders. Look, the other side, they undermine Trump all the time. They smashed windows and burnt down buildings. When we defy the law, we build pipelines. It's that simple. Now, this makes some people uncomfortable because they have this bizarre attachment to this idea that we're still living under the rule of law. We're not. That country's dead. We can bring it back, though. We can bring it back with the will of the people.
Hey, Charlie, you were definitely, if not the first, definitely the youngest thought leader to get behind Donald Trump, hop on the Trump train, get on the MAGA bandwagon. Be an America first young conservative. What was that? What was your thinking like? What got you to that point when so many other young people were going in another direction?
Yeah, I mean, I talk openly about this. I first was behind Ted Cruz, who I think very highly of, and I think he's terrific. And then there was this kind of this question of whether or not, you know, we were going to get behind Trump in 2016. And there was kind of one speech where Donald Trump just kind of went off script, and I miss 2016 Trump. He was like 2016 Trump, one of the greatest political kind of candidates I think ever. He was freewheeling and unfiltered and honest and brazen and somewhat chaotic, but incredibly entertaining and genuine. It was awesome. And there was one speech where he was just going freewheeling and the whole thing. And I think it was that he was like talking to the black community, and he said something where he said, "What do you have to lose?" And I said, "Anyone that has the courage to say that, that guy should be in charge of something." And it was right near there that I kind of just got behind the whole thing and got to know him very well. I think he did some things terrific in his presidency. I think he made some things that I think there's some things that could have been done differently and better in the last year of his presidency. I'll give you a couple examples. He should have suffocated, metaphorically suffocated. Let me go back. He should have diluted the influence of Fauci by putting him on a committee. Now, some people say he should have fired him. That would have been a mistake. He would have become a martyr and just as dangerous on cable television. He should have put him out to pasture on a committee of 35 people and say all of your rights to go on television have been rescinded by executive order of the president. Never can speak out again. Fauci undermined the Trump administration more than anyone else. He is a serpent. He should be in jail. He funded the gain-of-function research. He is a double-minded bureaucrat. And yeah, weasel is a really nice word for it. But I want to say this. The legacy of Donald Trump is one of restoring the moral argument that we have an obligation to our country and our fellow countrymen unapologetically above some sort of esoteric bumper sticker, some global organization, is that we as a compact, as a nation, have to look after who we call our fellow citizen, which goes back to this Greek word citizen, which means co-ruler, that we are all the sovereign in this country. And then I personally love how Donald Trump also inspired conservatives to be able to fight and challenge the left. And he did the one thing that you are not supposed to do, is he actually did everything he said he was going to do once he got elected. This is a major problem, right? Not supposed to do that. And look, I could go through probably 100 different grievances I'm sure the room has. I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like this. Look, you see what this regime is doing right now. You have no bad tweets right now. And look at the country you have, right? That was like the number one piece of feedback I received. But the final thing is this. Like the other things that Trump really liberated, though, that I think was so incredibly important, is that he gave us an opportunity to go represent and win back what has always made America the greatest nation ever, which is the common man. It's not the multi-billionaire. It is the plumber, the electrician, the welder, the police officer, the firefighter, the person that will hunt a couple weekends a year, earn $65,000 and has three kids. They did not feel as if the Republican Party spoke to them or for them before him. He came in and totally changed the Republican Party from a party with no identity to the working person's party. And I think that legacy is a very significant one, truly.
Hello, I'm Mary Lee Rosine Beasley. And it happens that Bill Beasley grew up in Evanston, Illinois. And I lived in Champaign-Urbana for 3 years.
I know both those places
very
well.
And my son is Robert Charles Beasley. But anyway, I am a public health nurse and a certified school teacher. And I have an MBA and 40 acres of property. And I am tired of my little community of Jersey Village being taken over by the good old boys. And I have run for JV City Council. I have run for Texas State Representative. And now I'm running for mayor of Jersey Village. And I haven't conceded the election because I think it was rigged. And I'm standing tall because I am a public health nurse. And I worked for Harris County Health Department. And I knew from the beginning this was the big lie, because I used to analyze active TB cases. Why, oh, why, oh, why? We had a weekly TB clinic. Why didn't they put UV lights?
So what's your question?
My question is, when is everybody in this room going to get together and stop this nonsense? Right?
All right.
And Jennifer Bridges is my hero. She was fired by Methodist Hospital. So if anybody wants to know, she's going to be doing a presentation right next Tuesday.
So my question is,
when are you all going to join us and stop this nonsense?
All right.
Thank you.
I love your spirit, by the way. It's terrific. Seriously. No, it's great. It's that is a high energy presentation right there. No, trust me, I'm right there with you. I don't really know how to answer that. Based on the nods and the approving applause, I think this room is ready to join in taking back the state of Texas in dramatic ways. Okay.
All right. Next. I love you, Mary Lee. It's been a while since I've seen you. Mr. Kirk,
When would you say in your personal life as an even younger man that you reached the turning point in becoming a conservative?
That's a great question. So, look, I wouldn't have called myself a conservative in like high school. I was, but my love was always of the country and our history and kind of a common unified American story. And as soon as that started to become controversial and the other side, you know, really kind of starting with Barack Obama in some ways, but he wasn't nearly as outwardly radical as kind of what we're seeing now, I started to become very defensive and very worried that the next generation is not going to be telling the same story of what it means to be American as the generation before it. This is one of the major reasons why mass third world immigration is not sustainable. A nation is the stories you tell to yourselves and your children. Amongst other things, it's a people, it's a custom, it's a history, it's a tradition. And when all of a sudden half the country thinks your history is racist, or 61% of students in college think that America is a terrible country, it's unsustainable. It's a pressure cooker. It's going to fall apart. And so that for me was a real eye opener. And then in my own personal last 10 years since starting Turning Point USA in June of 2012, I've learned a lot. I've probably spoken over 100 of these types of dinners. And grassroots activism is super important. I'm going to talk about how Harris County, how important it is to remain local, and it's really important. But I used to give the left the benefit of the doubt, and this was a major mistake. I know the left better than a lot of people. Not to say that I know better than you guys, but I deal with them all the time. I'm chased around by them all the time, literally. I intimately know what drives them. They don't want the same country we do. If I have to hear this one more time, you know, Charlie, we both want the same thing on the left. We just have a different way of getting there. You know, we just dropped the debate where I was debating a rather nice guy, Dr. Rashad Ritchie, left-wing professor. And I'm not saying he's a bad person, but he has a totally different vision of the country that he wants. He believes America is systemically racist. He thinks masks on children is perfectly fine. I can go through the list. I don't want that. I think these things are awful and terrible. In fact, I think it's child abuse, and especially against the child's will. And so what I'm getting at is that we've kind of been paralyzed in the last decade of thinking as if the opposition party, the Democrats, they kind of want the same sort of America we want to live in. That's not true. We have two fundamentally different visions of the type of country we want to live in and what we want to see happen. So I hope that somewhat answered the question. So next question.
Charlie.
Where are we at here?
Back there here. You
are. Okay.
Democrats are going to do what Democrats do. They're going to say what they're going to say. Right now, MSM is enemy number one. Democrats are they're no different than what they've been. I mean, they're worse, but we have two realities that are diverging. And it's no matter what crazy thing happens, the MSM paints it in a certain way. If it's horses with reins, it's guys with bullwhips driving people into the water to drown. If we did all these things you say to do, they're good things and we need to do them. MSM will merely paint them in such a way that everybody who listens to the five horsemen of the apocalypse is going to see it entirely different.
So
now MSM is supposed to, you know, Bernie Goldberg and O'Reilly say this is the year that MSM dies. But until we get these two realities back together, we're just spinning our tires in the mud.
Yeah.
What brings these things back together, Charlie? You see any sort of path to do that?
No, no. The only way to challenge it is to understand that they're going to have 10 to 11 million people that still subscribe to the New York Times, still watch CNN, still watch that. And we just have to have more people than they do. The different realities is not going to change. It's just not. So the question is, what do you do about it? You do the right thing. You build consensus. And then we have to build our own lines of communication. That's why I do podcasting. That's why I do 3 hours of radio a day. And I share your concern. The concern is that half the country is living in a completely different country than we are. And Sarah Silverman said out loud something that should horrify everyone, but it's where we're headed. If Texas doesn't act and do what I think needs to be done, and I went into great length about that, here's where we're headed. And this is something that I don't want to see happen. The media is so dishonest. They act as if I'm advocating for this. I think this would be tragic, but this is where we are headed. Where Sarah Silverman, who's like this comedian, I guess, who's not very funny, but she's a far left, she's a card-carrying member of the leftist industrial complex. And she said on her podcast, she said, you know, I hate unvaccinated people and I hate conservatives. Why am I living in the same country as them? Well, hold on, hold on. And guess what? When I visited Bandera, Texas for their deal, they say, I hate the left. Why are we living in the same country as them? In a decade, this country will separate.
I hope so.
Well, and that's what we're seeing, right? Is that we have very little in common with a regular person in San Francisco that doesn't share our story, doesn't share our values. There's a way to fix that. We can fix that by getting back from the brink and building a 60 or 70% consensus amongst the normal man, which I still believe is possible. In fact, I think it's there if our elections were done correctly and if we were able to communicate. But the only thing I would say is we have to completely dismiss what the other side will say about us. And then you do the right thing. We shouldn't worry about how it's going to be branded on the nightly news or how the New York Times is going to write about it. I'll give you one final example. My friend, Larry Elder, was running for the governor's race in California. On the front page of the Los Angeles Times, they said that Larry Elder is the black face of white supremacy. Is that a reason not to run for governor? Of course not. We know what they're going to do, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if it's Trump. We acted as if they only got outrageous at Trump. They were outrageous with Mitt Romney, who's practically a Democrat, right? They said that he like straps dogs to the top of cars and like, you remember all this? I mean, they were, the point is that they hate us. And honestly, I don't hate them. I have a strong dislike for some of them, but I really don't. Instead, my belief is that you need to do the right thing. And that, like, once the truth is allowed to spread, time and time again, conservatives win elections and we win arguments when we do the bold and courageous thing, regardless of what we think the papers are going to write about us. So, thank you. I could take a couple. I can go a little over if you want. So I don't want to ruin your schedule. I can go for as long as you want. So,
hey, Charlie, thank you first for giving the opportunity to Youth Freedom Connect to go to all your events. Thank you. The question is, my son is the president of the Turning Point Kingwood chapter here in Houston and is very strongly condensed with the Republicans and conservative children. But today we held a meeting right before this one, and only two boys showed up. So what advice do you have for us to be able to invigorate the communities and have young people just kind of like flock to us and say, hey, you do have a place where you can be a conservative and you can be, you know, a young teenage, you know, Republican, and there is no repercussion and there is absolutely nothing that is going to happen to you. So what advice do you give us as community and as parents to embrace the children? I mean, what can we do? I know that Stormy said, hey, we're going to send you pizza and stuff like that. So thank you for that as well.
Of course.
Kiddos showed up.
I mean, look, and then, first of all, they shouldn't lose spirit or lose momentum. There's more conservatives than that out there. And I'm sure there might have been logistical reasons, other sports or things that were happening. But I will say this, that the fact that they're even bold enough to try to start a Turning Point USA group, that's something that they deserve to be applauded for, is that they're in high school and they're willing to be a vocal and outspoken conservative. I don't care if two people or 200 people show up. And if those two people, by the way, this is something that I think we need to get a little bit better at. And at Turning Point, I say all the time, I care about the quality of the leader I'm rising up. The quantity will follow, right? Is that maybe those two people are the Churchill and Lincoln we're looking for, right? The point is that that will grow as long as they don't give up. We've dealt with this a lot. If they keep on persevering and they keep on organizing, and I'm happy to meet your son and encourage him as well. Is he here? Oh, don't give up. I will give it up for you no matter what. I think it's a great thing. And so, and I guarantee you that there's more people in your high school that share those values and that want to be associated with that. So, all right. Thank you. Next question.
How you doing? My name's Cody. I'm from the College Republicans at UH. And I have a question. I have a question from a lot of us students. We are doing a lot of campus activism and bringing in the students. But one question we fail to have a tactic for is, how do we plan to hold our professors and the administration accountable for teaching these very progressive policies on campus?
So thank you, by the way, and thank you for your courage for speaking out. I have some very contrarian views on college. We were discussing it briefly before. I think we have way too many people going to college in our country. I think college is a ripoff for most people that go, and a scam, quite honestly. With that being said, you're in college, so that doesn't help your question at all. But you even talk to college students, they're being forced to take classes they don't want to take. They're not going to retain a lot of the knowledge. It's becoming this automatic kind of credentialing exercise. Do you guys know that 41% of kids that go to college don't graduate? 41%. I know a ton of people that dropped out of college. I'm sure you know plenty as well. So here's the question, right? So the only way to hold your professor accountable is to be willing to get a lower grade. And so I think grades mostly don't matter, but I'm different, and I'm not saying that's the right thing for you. So a friend of mine, who's all of you know, has a different view on this, right? Ben Shapiro says, lie your way through college, right? And go get the best grade and go to graduate school. I think lying is terrible, even small lies. And I would rather have a generation of courageous C students than cowardly A students, right? And so I'm not saying, and by the way, people say, I got to get a good grade. Why? Does that create good character? Now, and again, maybe that's a good thing, good reason for you. I got to go to nursing school. I got to go to law school. Fine. Terrific. That's not my world, right? I'm not here to tell you, again, I'm not here to impose it on you. I'm just asking a question kind of about that. I know I'm getting the hook, but, the final thing is this though. If you're willing to get graded down, confront them directly and record them every single day. Now you will be treated differently. You will be kind of marked down. And so, but I would encourage that. So, okay. Can I say one last thing? Okay. I love Texas, everybody. I come here quite often. I hope that what I shared tonight can be shared with people that can make it happen. And I hope Texas embraces this opportunity and really kind of make some aims and measures towards it. I personally, as I mentioned, do two podcasts a day. If kind of the way we communicate has interested you, we'd love to kind of become one of your go-to news sources. We're constantly under cancellation threat from Apple and Facebook and all these people. You guys can easily subscribe on your phone. Every phone has a podcast app. You just type in Charlie Kirk Show. It would really bless us if you did that. If you don't know how to do that, ask our Turning Point USA high school student. I'm sure that he could guide you through. I'm deputizing you like the governor should deputize many people to secure the border. I'm deputizing you to become the go-to to help people subscribe to the podcast. But let me end with this, which is there was only one person that was smiling on the morning of December 7th, 1941. The only person smiling was the greatest man who lived in the 20th century, Winston Churchill. He walked into his war cabinet with a thing of whiskey and a cigar at 7 a.m. in the morning, and his war cabinet was sullen, demoralized, and without sleep. He was chipper, cheerful, and ready for action. He goes in and he says, "Why the long faces? We have won the war." And someone says, "What do you mean we've won the war?" And he says, "Pearl Harbor was bombed. We've won the war." And someone has the courage to challenge the prime minister. Bad idea. And they say, "What do you mean we've won the war? We barely just got our troops out of Dunkirk. The Royal Air Force is losing 250 planes a day. They just bombed a hospital in northern London. They are planning a ground invasion in Brighton, an amphibious invasion, and we don't have an ally as far as the eye can see. Our Navy is a joke. Our army is questionable at best. And your greatest political rival, Neville Chamberlain, is already filing papers for your removal and him to become prime minister. What do you mean, Mr. Prime Minister, we've won the war?" And he smiled and chuckled and took a puff of his cigar and a sip of his whiskey, said, "Ah, I know the Americans quite well, and I've studied them intimately. You see, the Americans, they have awoken. And once Americans are awake, the battle is over. And everybody, I'm telling you right now, once we awaken and you awaken, we are going to win." God bless you guys. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.